This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
And here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Boy Howdy and Kyle Brown. And a spasming Mike Salk somewhere, parts unknown.
Just writhing in pain. For those who don't know, Mike came down with kidney stones sometime last week. Which
For those that don't know, how would they not know? They follow him on Twitter. He posts a picture from the hospital, Howdy. What are you talking about? For those that don't know, okay, it's pretty clear the guy's got kidney issues. Not kidney stones, kidney stone issues. And if gout is the disease of royalty, what are kidney stones?
How does he get kidney stones?
The disease of aggression.
It must be.
Don't ask him. I asked him, is there something dietary? What's good? No. I talked to someone at the Mariners who's dealt with this for years. Nothing you can do about it. Like, oh, all right, okay.
Gallstones, we know, are the disease of poor diet.
Yes.
And when you have a gallstone as big as a golf ball, you know that that's been built on years of what, Howdy?
Lots of sugar and lots of oil. Both of those things. And as great a capacity as you consume them, because that's what makes food great. But yes, that's the consequence. They paid that consequence. They took it out. Now it's fine.
How do you learn that the hard way?
How do you keep getting kidney stones? How do you do? And now, how do you have kidney stones that they shoot with lasers and they stay stuck in your body for a week?
Get them out of there.
Get those kidney stones out.
Here's your host, Mike Sandblasted Kidney Stone.
Mike Spasm Salk. I mean, we gave it a week, right? We tried.
We waited.
We waited out a week. Poor guy's, as you said, in the hospital. They blast it with lasers. It's a huge. And by the way, anybody that's had kidney stones is right now like, you three fools. You should not in any way make fun, because it is one of the most painful things. And 10 millimeters or whatever his was gigantic.
Huge.
So huge. That is not nearly as big as your golf ball gallstone, Howdy.
Of course. But
somewhat close in perspective. So they try to blast it, and the poor guy is still in spasm. So, yeah, say some prayers, please, for Salk. But after a week, we decided, you know what? We probably got to keep rolling on this. We probably got to find a way to continue, because there's just way too much going on with the Seahawks, with the Mariners. One of us got to go to the Masters. Hamir Wright throwing Mike Hopkins under the bus. We've got the NFL draft, 2 weeks and 2 days away from when we're taping this. I mean, there is just simply too much, and we're not going to let spasms get in the way. And you know what? God bless Salk. He would want us doing this. Would he want Howdy talking as much?
No.
Is he going to talk over the next 45 minutes? Probably not.
No, I will. I will be talking quite a bit.
If he tunes in and listens to this through his pain meds and spasms, he's probably just going to get to the Masters. Part, I would think. I think he's probably going to try to fast forward to that. But we do have plenty to do, and there's just too much going on. So if you wouldn't mind, Howdy, Kyle, what do you think of a little five-part potpourri?
Ooh.
Can we do a five? It could just a one straight segment. As you know, I'm not a great pilot. I'm not going to tease us in and out. I'm going to give a send its due at the end of this sucker. But how about just a one-shotter? However long it's going to take. If it's 2 hours, the next 2 hours, and we talk about those five things. But how about just a little potpourri? Seahawks, Mariners, Masters, Huskies, draft. Sound good?
I love it.
You're down?
I am so down.
Let's go.
Kyle, you got any Masters questions ready for me?
Boy, Howdy can attest that I have a list here. I have come with my reporter's notepad, and I have a list. I'm going to grill you, because, Brock, you haven't mentioned yet, you are at the Masters. We're not just talking Masters. We're talking with boots on the ground. Live report from Brock at the Masters.
Yes.
So
it was incredible. So we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. But let's start with the Seahawks. We're 2.5 weeks from the draft.
We are. And
what is left for this team between now and the draft?
They're not going to trade up in this draft. They're not going to trade anybody, Bobby, Dwayne. They're not going to, I think, redo any deals. I think they're working behind the scenes to get Jamal done. I think that is the ongoing process, as it was with Tyler Lockett, and we saw Tyler's deal get done. They've got enough cash on hand. They've got enough future capital and cap space. Howdy, I know you study your cap space, and you study over the cap every single day, and you're studying that you and Clayton are got competing spreadsheets. I think more than anything, as far as what's left right now, is to get that deal done, is to secure him. He's not getting traded. He's not going anywhere. I think they love him. I think they have said and have always said when it comes to players that they believe in, they pay. And see also Tyler Lockett and all the guys through the years, and Russell and Richard and Bobby, they will pay for players that they believe in. And I think they're going to work simultaneously over the next 16 days to get their draft board, and we can talk about that, in the best shape possible. And as much as John and his team is doing that work on the personnel side, I think Matt Thomas on the cap end and John are working to get a deal done with Jamal. I think they would love to do that before the draft, to button that thing up, secure him, see what's left for maybe a few other little pieces. Maybe it's a corner. Maybe it's a pass rusher. Maybe it's KJ. Maybe it's another receiver. And there's a bunch of free agents out there whose market has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller as these days and weeks have gone by, including KJ. But I think Jamal is probably top priority before they get the rest of those pieces done.
So how tough of a pill is this going to be to swallow? Because if they're going to get a deal done with Jamal Adams, which a lot of people have thought is an inevitability this offseason, we've all sort of assumed that that's going to make him, if not the highest paid safety, one of the two highest paid safeties of all time. You'll have one of the highest paid quarterbacks of all time, the highest paid middle linebacker of all time, and potentially the highest paid safety of all time. How hard is this pill going to be to swallow?
Probably hard for 2021, probably like a 10 millimeter kidney stone to try to obliterate, right?
Well, he didn't have to swallow that, did he?
That would have just been brutal. He swallowed that eventually created.
No. Swallowing, I think he would have chosen. What and how it has to come out the other end and the tools that go into that, I don't think any of us would choose. And spasms, yes, Howdy, I think there's probably going to be some spasms in the short term. Over the long term, is that salary cap is going to go up as these TV deals have gotten done. Over the long term, I think you're going to feel much easier about Russell Wilson's cap number for the next 2 years. Even Tyler Lockett's number for the next 2 or 3 years. What DK Metcalf is going to get when that salary cap increases, if he puts together another incredible year, that's going to surpass Tyler Lockett. So you're going to look at DK and Tyler and at that point, Jamal and Russell, and we'll see. I mean, this is a big year for Bobby making $18 million. He's the most vulnerable. I don't think there's going to be any question moving forward in the years ahead. That deal is the outlier. That deal is going to be the most vulnerable. And we'll see what endgame is with Jamal. Right? How badly does he want all of his guaranteed money now? How badly does he, you know, or how creative? I guess how badly does he love Seattle, Howdy? How badly did he love playing for Pete in this system? How badly does he love being out of New York and in this place that took pretty darn good care of him, that put him in a position to set an NFL record for sacks all time for a secondary player, that coveted his skill set and says, hey, man, we want to be creative. You're going to get yours. The average salary is going to surpass Justin Simmons, 14.5? You're going to surpass that, but we're going to do it in a creative way. So we can get this deal done now, and you can make your 15, 16, 17 million in the years to come with a growing cap that I don't think will be too outsized once those cap increases, you know, really do grow exponentially.
Other than locking him up long term, what's the motivation to get Adams and Lockett done before the draft? Doesn't that lead you to think they want to clear up some cap space for something?
Yeah, I think there's 2 or 3 more moves. I think that there is a pass rusher, and there's a bunch of veteran names out there. I think some intriguing names still. So I think they learned the lesson the hard way the first half of last year, you know, that you have got to. I don't think they can fully count on Daryl Taylor just because that is such a medical unknown.
Fully count on him. They can't partially, can't remotely count on him thus far.
So, you know, and you can't ever, ever have enough pass rush. So I don't know if that's Everson Griffin. I don't know exactly which guy that is. Alton Smith, any of those veteran guys, there are a bunch of veteran guys. I think you're going to keep, you know, to your point, a little bit of money available there. As far as receiver goes, this is a deep receiver draft, but you went that way with Swain in the late rounds last year. I don't think they're going to spend a second round pick on a third receiver, knowing Tyler's been paid, DK's going to get paid. So is
you going to let Freddie Swain stop you from going out to get a number 3 receiver, just like you let David Moore do that?
No. Like, I think that's probably a veteran receiver. I've said this for months. Who's the name that I've said for months that would be very, very intriguing? Not to the quarterback, but
Golden Tate?
Silver Skate would be a very, very intriguing guy to me. And, I said that a couple months ago. And by the way, he is still out there. So you look at guys, that I think system fit-wise in that slot, some of the things they like to do. So, are they going to, spend a minimum with some incentives on a veteran receiver?
Well, they were linked to Sammy Watkins.
Yep.
And as a potential number three. He signed elsewhere.
So I think I think you want to get Jamal done. You get Tyler done. So you have enough left in your kitty to make a few of these moves in a market that's favorable. Bill Belichick, was on the record, and Robert Kraft, and they said, goodness gracious. The reason that we spent as big as we did is we felt there were market conditions that were so favorable to us. And in an extraordinary year, we're going to spend more money than we've ever spent in our lifetimes because they really felt like there was value. So they did it, and they played that way.
And the Patriots, by the way, did exactly what I was wishing the Mariners were able to do. Because they looked at this thing and said, all these teams are going to bow out because things are financially different than before. But we planned for this.
Yep.
We prepared ourselves to take advantage of a situation that's never coming around again.
Correct.
And we're going to come out on the other end better than anyone could possibly because we had a plan and a forecast. And unfortunately, because the Seahawks have missed in the draft for so many years and missed in free agency, they're kind of having an empty cupboard every offseason. And you're not in a position where you can capitalize.
To a degree. I would also say that they played this market pretty well. The Carlos Dunlap is here. The Kerry Hyder is here. The Puna Ford is here. The Tyler is extended, right? That, yes, maybe it's not a bonanza and brilliant as you would put New England into that category, but I don't think in any way it's disastrous. It's probably middle of the pack as far as some of that thinking goes. And by getting these deals done and having a cash on hand ownership group, you now still have some monies available for this third wave. And man, when you look at the names in this third wave, and I don't want to be an apologist, an excuse maker, but howdy, look at the third wave of names right now that are still available. And to me, they are much more favorable than they've been in years past.
Totally.
Richard Sherman and Casey Hayward, right? You mentioned Golden Tate. Look at this pass rush list. This isn't a Clay Matthews that's beat up and done last year, and ultimately the wave crashed and his career ended. This is there's still some guys that just last year, put up some productivity. And KJ Wright is still out on that market. So I think this is a third wave.
Geno Atkins, Melvin Ingram.
Yes.
Short.
Yes.
Interesting.
There are much more interesting names bobbing around, spasming around in a third wave out there trying to land a home. I don't know how many times can I fit spasm. Seriously, why am I even joking about it? I know what back spasms are. I know what that pain is. So it's absolutely no fun, and I apologize very much so. So that's what I think is left for the Seahawks.
But you say there's a lot of names out there.
Yes.
A lot of names.
There are a lot of names.
Are they players still? Like, okay, Geno Atkins. I know the name.
Is KJ Wright still a player?
You tell me.
I think he's a player, and I love this. I think he's a player at a minimum deal with a few incentives. That if he starts games and his legs hold up and his body holds up as they did a year ago, that he can still make some money, right? But he's not I'm going to guarantee him $7.5 million kind of player. Geno Atkins, I'm not going to guarantee $5 to $7 million with those legs, with those knees. Everson Griffin and Melvin Ingram, I'm not going to guarantee big money to them. But those are names in a third wave that can play. And if you can get them to play on a minimum deal, or do these players say what Julian Edelman said, man, my body's just beat up. Like, I'm done. Russell Okung. Eric Fisher, the left tackle from the Chiefs. Love that guy. I mean, that is another third waiver that is sitting out there bobbing around. Like, he's expecting Richard Sherman. Maybe. Is still expecting significant money. They're still thinking there is significant money out there, and I don't think there is. And I think after this draft, they're probably playing that game, Jadeveon Clowney. Like, you know what? Let me just wait for the draft. Let me see what team address their needs in this draft, what team still needs it, and then after the draft, I'm Richard Sherman representing myself, X, Y, and Z, you all didn't get a corner. So now you're going to need me, right? Now we're going to be talking about the money that I still think I'm worth, 7, 8, 10, 12 million bucks. And teams are going to say, like they did last year to Clowney and others, sorry, that's all we got left in the kitty. Money is spent. If you want to come here, here's a minimum deal. So I think that you're going to see a couple veteran players that are in a better spot than they had been in the past. And if they get those guys, howdy, on a minimum deal with incentives, then where do you put the Seahawks? then do you say it's a disaster? Then do you say, oh, all these failed drafts have put them in this position? Or do you say, golly, they played this market well. And I'm glad John was out there talking to the Bears. And I'm glad John was out there receiving calls from everybody on Russell Wilson. And I'm sure glad they got a pretty good bead on where this market was going to be. And I'm glad we extended John and Pete because of their relationships, and in particular John, in this offseason, is they've been silent publicly, privately, they've been speaking to everybody. And they had a pretty good bead on this market. And I actually kind of like a lot of these pieces and how they were able to fold them in while extending Jamal, while extending Tyler, while bringing Dunlap back has actually got me a little bit excited for the future
prospects.
You know,
Brock, I'm totally with you on that because, you know, we were really critical of the team last year and the year before in a lot of ways because there were a lot of missed opportunities, it felt like, and they came out of the offseason with rosters that seemed to me like were marginally better, if not the same, every year for the last couple of years.
Yep.
And the problem with that was that they had a lot of resources to spend in those years.
Correct.
They had lots of cap space.
And they went for volume.
They
and
had
they didn't.
Lots
yep.
of picks.
Yep.
And they come out of it in the same or worse position. That, to me, is awful. However, they entered this offseason in the exact opposite position. And to me, doing the same thing they've done in the past is a home run.
Yes.
Like, you do the yep. same thing you've been doing the last 3 or 4 years based on what you have with no picks and no money to spend, and you still come out with the same kind of haul is amazing.
Pretty
that's
savvy.
Awesome. I
okay,
love
that's one. Hey, we got a whole potpourri here to get to, okay? And if Kyle wrote down a list of questions, I've got answers, and you guys are going to chuckle at what your boy did a couple times on that golf course. On Sunday in Augusta, where I probably crossed the line, where I probably talked to the starting pitcher on the day he's pitching when I shouldn't have, but
no.
I did it anyway, so we'll get to that here in a minute. We don't have anything for potpourri, right? We don't have any sound effect or...
We'll add it later.
It's post-prod.
How do you
post-prod?
Say that's
post-prod?
Okay, so there's some Seahawks stuff. We're 2 weeks away. I think there will be some possible, you know, veterans. I think there could be a Jamal deal done. I know they're working on that behind the scenes, trying to figure that thing out here before the draft. And as I said, we're just a couple weeks away from the draft as well. So Seahawks, I think we've covered that for Mike and his spasms. Let's get to the Mariners. Let's get to this little 5-4 start as we're taping this today. They will have a doubleheader with the Orioles and some games, obviously, this week out on the road. I guess I'll throw it your way here. Howdy first. I've watched a couple of the games, I think 3 or 4, almost in their entirety from some distance. Give me the, and characterize for me, this start for the Seattle Mariners.
Can I give you the good, the bad, and the ugly?
Oh yeah.
Please.
Uh-huh. The good, the bad, and the ugly for the Mariners start so far.
And I'll give you the same, okay?
The good. The guys that everyone said are going to carry this team are the guys that are carrying the team.
Yep.
That's really, really good news.
Kendall Graveman, Montero.
Kyle Seager.
Yep.
Mitch Haniger. Those two guys are carrying
the lineup.
Ty France was maybe a little bit more of an outlier to me, like somebody I probably wasn't going to count on carrying them, but you...
Well, they believe so. I mean, they put him right there in the middle of those guys.
The formula for this team to be good this year was to have your heritage veterans...
Yep.
Be the best players on your team and buy you time until everyone else catches up. And with
yep.
the exception of Marco Gonzalez, who's been a disaster, and I have my conspiracy theory as to why, the veterans on this team have played to their capabilities and more. And I think
Agreed.
That's a huge, huge deal.
I would agree with that.
The bad?
That very good. Yep.
The two things that you... The two prospects that I really wanted to see more of and needed more out of this year to make sure that I felt good about their core... Evan White and J.P. Crawford.
Yep.
Those two guys, if they were to gamble correctly on those two guys, the Mariners would be in a position where any money they spent next year is basically icing on the cake of an already playoff team. If Evan White and J.P. Crawford play to their capabilities or play up to their potential or just improve in general...
Yeah, take a next step
just
from a Gold Glove years a season ago.
They yep. have every reason to believe that they're a playoff team next year. With those two guys struggling and not answers at shortstop and first base, it's two more holes you have to fill. And that's
yep.
a bad, bad deal.
Well, okay, we're not talking about filling a hole at first base already, are we?
Yeah. Yeah, I
am. Bro, it's the first week of his second season.
Plus a season. It's not good enough. It's not even close to good enough.
He's a Gold Glover.
He's a Gold Glover. Good for him. He plays first base. Like, put Ty France at first base. What are we talking about? First base doesn't matter. Congratulations, you're a legendary first baseman. It's like having a legendary plumber. Like, get a plumber. Like, fix the plumbing. It's not a big deal.
Oh, okay. So you snaked the drain. Great.
Yeah, somebody else saved the drain, too. You use
okay, okay,
pipes,
hold on a second. This is a Brock and hey, this is a Brock and Salk podcast, okay? I can feel Salk's presence right now. Brock, start talking. Shut Howdy up, okay? Please.
The ugly. No,
before you get to ugly. Before you get to ugly, I'm going to give you my good and bad. Because my good, I tend to agree with you. I think that is strong. I'm also going to say, through just 9 games, these dudes are doing what they did a year ago in a short season. They're playing hard. Each and every game, they're playing hard. They're coming back in games. They're not just rolling over. I've seen our boy Brent Stecker and others online and on Twitter and in writing, you know, about how, golly, they're getting hard to play against. That was the ethos from the very beginning, be hard to play against. And through 9 games, they have been. And somehow they've scrapped their way to 5-4. So big picture, 30,000-foot level, not the nitty-gritty, not individual play. It feels a little bit like what we saw last year. Like, man, these guys enjoy playing. They're pretty disciplined. They don't throw the ball all over the yard and make a ton of mistakes. Yeah, they're overmatched in some points, and their young guys are not stepping up. But just by and large, big picture, they're playing the game the right way, and because of it, they're 5-4. The bad, I'm going to give you a little further jet fuel. Evan White and Mike Zunino, and I was texting you guys this last week, as I watch Evan White, God bless him, plays an incredible first base like Zunino played an incredible catcher. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
You
mean they're great guys. They are stand-up guys that came out of the SEC. They're big-time college players. But, man, there is a high strikeout rate, like just making contact. So I went back and looked the first 200 at-bats of their career. Mike Zunino and Evan White, first 200 bats of their career. Somewhat similar age, right? Kind of rushed through the minor leagues because they're mature, because they were first-round picks, because they came out of the SEC with a lot of experience there. What do they call the SEC? Is that like right in between 1A and 2A, you know, as far as minor league baseball? Evan White, Mike Zunino. Evan White, 203 at-bats. Mike Zunino, 193 at-bats. Evan White, 91 strikeouts.
It's half?
Almost half.
Well, then you put it that way.
In a 172 average. Almost half. Almost a 50. This season's been over 50% strikeout rate. But this was, you know, the back half of last year and everything else. 91 strikeouts and 203 at-bats, .172 average. Zunino, in his first nearly 200 at-bats, 49 strikeouts. So about a quarter, you know, not nearly that, almost half of the number of strikeouts in the .214 average. It is early. I'm not writing them completely off. You cannot make that that judgment in my estimation until he gets 500, 600, 700 at-bats.
Totally fair.
But when you are a first-round first baseman, there is a different level of expectation on you than there is a middle infielder or, you know, even a shortstop with J.P. Crawford. Because if his glove is good enough, right, even in today's baseball, you can say as a middle infielder, if he is a gold glover, can I live with a .220 average? Can I live with no pop? What do I want to? No. But can I live with it? Yes. First round first baseman with no pop, with the inability to hit, that is a much more difficult pill to swallow.
And you can't have both of those guys on the same team. Because if you have both of those guys on the same team, then you have to have MVPs at other positions when you could just have above average players, because you've got a gap to make up. You can't have those guys be liabilities at two of your most important offensive positions. Not the shortstop.
There's good and bad. There's good and bad. I know what ugly is, because ugly, I think, is for the three of us.
Ugly,
right?
Is James Paxton. And I'm going to give you 4 numbers that help you understand why James Paxton is ugly. The first is 18.5. The second is 17. The third is 8.5. And the fourth is 5. Those are the 4 highest salaries on the team. And James Paxton is the third. He's making $8.5 million on a team where the next highest paid player makes 5. They spent so much money and resources on that guy.
Who is 17? 18 and a half is Kyle, right?
$17 million is Yusei Kikuchi.
Don't say that.
Is he really making
Yusei Kikuchi
17
makes
million?
$17 million this year. Oh, which, on the scope of
baseball
players...
He's starting to turn it a little.
Yeah, in the scope of pitchers and starting pitchers, That's above average money, but that's not ridiculous money.
Yeah, but he's not an above average starting pitcher.
No, he has certainly not been up to this point, and that's some of the gamble you made when you signed him into a long-term deal. The problem with James Paxton is they spent money that they could have spent in a lot of other places. And to them, the only bad scenario was that he gets injured. The only one. And unfortunately, that's the only most likely scenario you had, is that he's going to get injured. Yeah. You just threw money down the toilet with that. It feels bad. He's had a great spring, but man.
Is $5 million Marco? Is Marco,
yep, Marco Gonzalez.
So that's your three pitchers there behind Kyle. Yeah, it's just, it's ugly in every way. It's ugly for him individually. You feel awful because he is just a tremendous guy. It isn't just one of these stories that he's in the best shape of his life. You could look at him and see that he was in the best shape of his life, that he did everything possible. That just kind of bloaty, baby fat, soft body, he refined as much as he possibly could. He wanted to be back here. I think he so desperately wanted to help this organization that was good to him, that drafted him, that developed him, that poured into him. You know, and I think he genuinely, in his heart of hearts, wanted to succeed for him. And with Marco and with Kyle and with Haniger, to your point, the heritage players, right? Just be a difference maker. And in that second inning, as I was watching live, and you see him immediately wince and know that's awful. And then to see Service, you know, run out there, it's further awful. And to see Heyman be the first to report that it's going to be Tommy John, and I know he's seeking a second opinion, and maybe as this podcast goes live, we're going to get the news.
As of Monday, we're still awaiting word.
But awaiting the second opinion, which to me is ugly. It just means this is going to be Tommy John surgery. And I guess I ask, and Howdy, I don't know if you're going to just talk out of your gallbladder on this one or if you know all the details. When you sign James Paxton to just a one-year deal, right, $8.5 million, are you able to give him a physical? Are you able to MRI that elbow? Are you able to do, because it was that arm and that forearm and that elbow that shut him down in New York last year. And you had very little, right? You went and watched his training session, right? His bullpen session. You watched him this spring. But once you watched him in that little bullpen session, you signed him to that $8.5 million. Was that an $8.5 million, in your estimation, that's an $8.5 million risk that was absurd?
To me, if you're not going to add anything else, and they really didn't spend a single dollar this offseason. They spent nothing. And if you were to tell me, and I don't think this is what happened, but if you were to tell me that the Mariners had $10 million they could spend in the offseason, and you chose to spend $8.5 million on James Paxton in a year when you were not committing to be in the playoffs, the only explanation to that is that it wasn't really a baseball decision. That baseball was okay with it because he's going to be a good pitcher if he's healthy, and it's going to help us. That's going to be good. And he's going to be valuable if he's on the team, and we can trade him if we're not in contention. So those are good baseball reasons. But if you're telling me I had $10 million to spend on a team that I don't expect to make the playoffs, I'm not spending it on James Paxton for a year.
Well,
so
he looked like the best pitcher in the Cactus League. He struck out 17 batters in like 8 innings.
He did, yep. Coming off year after year after year of injuries. So to me, I wouldn't make that decision. I understand that baseball, it's a good baseball decision technically, but it's a great baseball decision if you're going to spend $50 million in an offseason. Because that guy pays off, like, great, you've got a great offseason. If he doesn't, you've still got a ton of other players that are going to fill the gap. They didn't do that with this guy. He wasn't the savior for their team. They just threw money at something.
Threw money at someone with some familiarity, threw money at somebody that has some following, that has the Maple Grove and Stick Riz and those poor guys. And
shout out
up
Stick
there.
Riz. Yeah, a long out. Summer without,
golly,
without the Packs.
Yeah, not going
to
be.
And they were talking to, I mean, they were flirting with Taiwan Walker, we thought, and looking for that extra arm. It wasn't just, hey, we'll sign James Paxton and he'll sell some tickets sort of thing. I mean, they were looking for an arm, and then Paxton was the one that fit at their price. And obviously, bad break. But, I mean, I think they expected to get some juice out of that squeeze.
Yep, just damaged, unfortunately. Just some damaged damaged goods. And could that have happened in his 30th start this season? Yeah.
Could have.
Could
have
happened in his 15th start? Yeah. The could've. Fact that it happened in his first is just, as you said, ugly, catastrophic in every way. You feel terrible for him individually, for his career, what this is going to mean for someone that just put everything in to getting himself. Because I do think, genuinely, he wanted to do well by the Mariners and do well for the Mariners. And that's just the ticking time bomb, as we know, that is the arm and the elbow.
Last thing on him, because okay. I do have one more qualifier on this. So, Taiwan Walker, we mentioned, the Mariners were interested in. We thought they really wanted him. This would be a good match. Taiwan Walker makes $10 million this year. And you have him for another 2 years at $7 and $6 million. Would you have rather had James Paxton for 1 year, $8.5 million, or Taiwan Walker for 10 this year, 7 and 6 the years following, based on what you saw and the fact that he's had one injury his entire career?
I think I'd rather have just the one-year bet, because I need to see, to your bad point, Evan White and J.P. Crawford and the other young pieces here, and eventually this season, as you call up your Kelenics and maybe even J-Rod later in the year, and Logan. I need to see those guys. I don't want to commit 3 years. I don't want to commit any dollars past this season, Howdy, until I have answers on my young prospects that I'm truly, truly counting on. And even you know, some of the young pitching that we have drafted that is highly thought of around the league, I need to see them, albeit in a short minor league season, in some cases at the AAA level, and who knows, maybe they even near the end of the year get called up. So I think I am more comfortable on just spending 1 year, even if it blows up in my face. Then what did you say are the next two for Taiwan? Another 13,
7,
and 7. Yep. Yeah, I think I would rather just commit to this 1 year and try to continue to find and dig for answers. Speaking of which, digging for answers, I'm ready, Kyle. I am so prepared to give you everything you want on the Masters. Let me set the table just a little bit. It was Friday afternoon. I flew to Atlanta, spent the evening bedding down with my buddy Ben Hartsock and his wife Amy.
Like you were a deer in the tall grass.
Well, it's a term that he uses. He's a Southern Ohio guy. I laughed at that term the first time I heard it too. But yep, I had a wonderful time with them. She made me the most delicious, they have chickens in their backyard, the most delicious fried egg bagel sandwich on my way out the door Saturday.
I thought you were going to say chicken.
About two hours and 10 minutes driving east on Highway 20 out to Augusta. Not much there. Not much on Highway 20 from Atlanta to Augusta. But you could start to sense it. You could start to feel the heartbeat and the pulse. And as I pulled into Augusta in the old colonial home that the group had rented for us, pulled in there, I don't know, about 2 in the afternoon on Saturday, hunkered down and ate a lot of food and watched a lot of golf on the big screen in the backyard, kind of a back porch set up perfectly for this group that I was with, a couple other former NFL players, friend of mine, friends, multiple friends of mine from Compassion International, hunker down and watch all Saturday's action. We get, you know, the fellow that hosted us and put it on, it's his job full time. It's what he does. He puts groups together to visit golf courses and tournaments all around the world. So he was so dialed in. We have our chairs ready, the Masters lawn chair. It's by the front door. Our badge is hanging off of it. It's like Christmas when I go to bed Saturday night. Set the alarm early. We're going to get there early. And we said to him, hey, can we get out there at 7:30? He's like, probably too early. Adam Scott tees off at 10. 7:30 is probably, it's probably too early. But I'd recommend 8:30. You'll see Adam and some of the others out there. On the chipping green, just go and make your way down Magnolia Lane. Make your way there. Just soak it all in. So, yep. So that's what we did. Sunday morning, the alarm woke up. Boom. Just out of bed, like a rocket to the car, driving. About 4 minutes to the golf course from this house. Parking lot, everything dialed in, like Disneyland. Absolutely. First thought is this is Disneyland. I'm pulling up to Disneyland in the woods.
Bed down.
I've been bedded down. I'm energized. Tennis shoes. That's the number one thing. Wear the most comfortable shoes you have because you're going to be on your feet for the next 10, 11 hours on a pretty hilly course, especially 8 and 9 that we went up and down 5 times. Very, very hilly. And just got out there and now I'm ready. Whatever you want, you fire away, Kyle.
I have so many questions. Okay. I mean, starting at the top.
All right.
So you're able to park there? You don't get shuttled in? Do you get to experience
unlike
Magnolia Lane?
Do
you come in through a back door?
You don't come in Magnolia Lane, but you park kind of on the back side of it. There's a number of different parking lots. So unbelievably organized. A gazillion volunteers and paid people out there. And yeah, parked and just immediately get on the grounds. So you park and it's not a 100-yard walk until you start to walk through the first part. Okay, and the big scoreboard's right in front of you. Whew, see the big scoreboard. And then you kind of get funneled through an area of security. And this is where the fun began. Because there's probably a 70-year-old woman, and she's barking out like they do at TSA. She's barking out, don't be the one!
Oh,
I'll laugh at you! I'll laugh at you! Walk of shame! Don't be the walk of shame!
Of what?
What?
Because if you try to bring your cell phone, your iPad, any bit of electronics and technology through a very wide security gate, very similar to the ticket entrance to Disneyland, you think you're going to bring your cell phone, your technology, your camera, whatever, you ain't. and they call it the walk of shame. Those that have tried to tape it, those that have tried to put it on their insides, those that have tried to sneak it through that security, not going to happen. And you're going to have the walk of shame back out to your car, your ticket taken, and you will have no entrance.
What?
Yes. So she is screaming, don't make me laugh at you. I'll laugh at you. It'll be a walk of shame like you've never had before. She's just barking it out, trying to tell you, don't be a fool. Don't do it. Don't do it. So,
do,
yeah.
Do you think that they got the idea from Jeter, or did Jeter get the idea from them in terms of like collecting all of the electronics?
Fair enough. Good question, Howdy. Good question. I'm going to say Jeter probably got the idea from them. So then you go through a security, right, and the whole deal, and the metal detectors and everything else. And, yeah, all I had was my wallet. That's it. And car keys. That was it.
Now, we know the course. We know there's the uphill dogleg par 5/8. We know Amen Corner. We know the 16th par 3 over water. But do you have your bearings about you? Do you know where 16 is in relation to the par 3 fourth? Do you, have any sense of where to go?
So unlike Chambers, you went to Chambers, right, Kyle?
Yes, sir.
Disaster. I mean, I can see why the Masters is, but Chambers, a beautiful course to play. Disastrous in your viewing of the U.S. Open. Let me make that clear. I love Chambers, but your experience, you and me walking that and trying to orientate yourself and see anything compared to this, mm-hmm. night and day. This was like a park, honestly, that opened up before your eyes. It was Disneyland. It was magical. There's Never Never Land. There's Tomorrowland. It's all laid out. You've got an incredible booklet. You've got maps. You got whatever you need. But once you got on the ground, so you get through security, then you walk through this unbelievable veranda of just this. It's so meticulously beautiful. Every detail. And like Disneyland that has three workers for every patron, it's the same thing. I mean, they are the kindest, like Chick-fil-A. How can I help you? How can I serve you? Smile, your Southern hospitality off the charts. And then you walk down another lane that's got the gift shop that is, much bigger than any home I've ever owned. It is gigantic. And you walk in there and it's organized, incredibly beautiful. The concessions, there's about half dozen of them laid out. You don't order. You just pick up and then you go through at the very end. You can pay, actually, Apple Pay.
Like a cafeteria.
It is. It's a cafeteria.
But you Apple Everything. Pay. You don't even have your phone.
It's well, those that had a watch. Jimmy had a watch and he could do it that way. Otherwise, yeah, it's $1.50 for every sandwich. It is, $5
you have the
bucks
pimento
for a
cheese
beer.
Sandwich?
I did.
And?
Way overrated.
Oh,
way,
really?
Way overrated.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was two pieces of Wonder Bread with a dollop of both mayonnaise, a mixture of like your mayonnaise, cheddar, and pimento.
Ugh.
And the one that I had was not even spread out. It was bad. It was really bad. That was not good. They call it their original chicken sandwich. Cold chicken breast, not good. Not good. Egg salad, decent, but again, just on Wonder Bread.
You got the peach ice cream sandwich?
Okay, that you could charge $25 for, and people would
Thank
buy.
You. That's what I wanted to hear.
Was the best thing, bar none, not even close second.
You can't get that anywhere else in the world, either the ice cream or the cookies that
Correct.
They put on there.
Snickerdoodles with peach ice cream. You could try to manufacture and make it yourself. It won't taste as good. It was unbelievable, and it was a beautiful day. It was 75. The clouds, the sun darting in and out of the clouds, not too humid, but that was, yeah, you could just have that and drink some beer and be just fine. Everything else was just carb load. It was just Wonder Bread carb load.
What was the first just take your breath away, whoa moment? Was it
so
seeing
after you
something?
Walk down, just like Disneyland, where you walk down that avenue, right? You walk down that lane that's got, it's the same thing. You walk down this lane and boom, there pops out Ryan Fitzpatrick. Bam. How you doing, Ryan? Big bushy beard.
Well, there's Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Hey, there's Ryan Fitzpatrick. How you doing? Nice
Tappy
to see
Gilmore's
you.
Caddy.
Yep, there's Condoleezza Rice. Boom. Condoleezza Rice.
So, Condi?
Wearing her green blazer because every member wears their green blazer when they're walking the course.
Is that a point of distinction? Is that
yes.
so you can trouble them for directions?
I don't think it's kind of a
subtle brag.
Are they forced to like work or volunteer there
They're totally working. And every one of them
really?
Has, yes.
Wow.
See, I thought Peyton, when I reached out to Peyton, I kind of tried to see like, hey, can I? Nope. He's entertaining.
Now, is he wearing a green jacket?
Oh, yeah. Every member wears a green jacket. So you know who are the members, but most of them are, honestly, every time I saw any member, they were hosting 2, 3, 4 people. So I'm sure that that is, whether that's a corporate deal, whether that's been an auction that someone paid $100,000 for, right, to spend the day with a member at Augusta. I also learned this. Here's a couple things I learned before your questions. They shut down. Do you know they shut down that course from June, July, August, September? 4 months shut down.
Really?
Yep.
Prime golfing
was
months?
Was it overseated or?
Nobody plays. June, July, August, September. No member plays. Nobody plays. It's hot. It's humid. And in order to protect that grass that looked like carpet, it looked like the spongiest, most beautiful carpet
like
you've ever
VMAC.
Set foot on. Yes. And that's where they do their restoration, their renovation. They've always constantly, they've added 2,000 yards to that course since Bobby built it. Not one. On Amen Corner, by the way, on number 12, where I did sit, and you can get to, we'll get to that later. So they shut it down. Number two, members. How many rounds of golf do you think members get to play at Augusta?
I would have thought like unlimited.
Yeah, nope. You were wrong. Me too. Nope. I think they can only bring somewhere, this was debatable, and I don't know the information for sure, but in talking to our bigwig, and I tried to confirm it with Peyton before this taping, didn't he not get back to me?
Oh.
I think it's only 12 to 15 guests a year. That you can bring and
really?
Play.
Really? Guests.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can't
but
just
you can go
play
with members.
No. Nope, you can't go play whenever what? You want. It is a scarcity, bro. It is a, like, even for members, it is held in that esteem. Like, there's a reason Hideki's caddy took his hat off and bowed to the course. Because
amazing.
When you get to play it, it is rare and it's meant to be scarce. And it is meant to be not in any way, shape, or form overplayed ever, ever, ever. So it is shut down June to September. Shut down.
Wow.
So the amount of rounds that are played on that are few and far between. And when you do, you are held in an esteem in a class that, you know, none of us will ever touch. So that was something that I learned. The cabins are kind of scattered around near the top of the course. So once you kind of start to walk into the bowels of it, you mentioned, like, can you orientate yourself? Yes, because there's this amazing park ground in between like 18, no, in between, yeah, kind of 9 and 18. There's this like pie shaped, like it's a huge like park. Like you could put another couple holes there, but they leave that as this kind of open area for you to congregate. And I'm sure that's where grandstands in normal years sit, right? And I saw it in its peak, man. I will never see the Masters again. I don't think I want to go.
Because you're not going to beat that.
I was with 5,000, not 50,000. There wasn't a grandstand to be had. I saw it in its unbelievable, natural, pristine beauty on a day that was as picturesque as any, on a day that was historic, that saw a Japanese player win for the first time in the history of that course. It was unparalleled and unprecedented.
I want it through only your eyes. Now, I want Brock's eyes. So first up, body show. I mean, was there some golfer out there who's, I mean, no, Phil and the Cavs. I know they're all in pants, but
yep.
Someone who jumped. Well, that guy's huge. That guy's jacked. Well, that guy's flabby.
What's Tony Finau?
I mean,
like?
Let's hear the Heward body.
Tony
show.
Finau, all you see are his feet. His feet are gigantic.
He's like wearing flippers or something.
He's like, he's got clown's feet. You can see his feet from 300 yards away. Like, oh, there's Finau. There's his clown shoes. DeChambeau. Okay. DeChambeau looks like some of my high school lineman teammates, right? Like 6'2", 220. He just looks like a just burly. He's
big
totally
chest.
Totally different. He played with Lane Kiffin, by the way. I don't know what the guy's name was, English. But the guy
Paris
was a
English.
Spitting image facially of Lane Kiffin,
huh.
Who tried to play hard guy the whole time. Face image didn't change whatsoever.
Yeah.
We decided, Jimmy and I, Jimmy is the president of Compassion, Jimmy Mulatto, great guy. A decathlete in the Olympics, by the way, in 84 from El Salvador. Amazing guy. That made the experience, too. I got to spend 10 hours with just a tremendous person. A great, great guy. The president of Compassion International. So he and I decided, hey, let's walk. After we watched the driving range, we watched Adam Scott. He is handsome. Gosh, he's handsome.
Great.
Really good looking
Aussie,
guy.
Got the accent going.
Gary Woodland, who is cockier. He's got, if Howdy has a cocky walk, multiply it by 100 for Gary.
Yes, the Kansas boy.
Is Merton Hanks. He's got a hockey walk. He is a rooster out there. And that dude took a, by the way, one of the most fantastic things I saw. I'm going to try it the next time I'm on the range, Kyle. He took an umbrella out of his. So just watch all these guys hit was awesome. And at that point, Jose Maria, You know who was bigger was cocky Poulter, Ian Poulter, walking around there.
Loud pants on.
Loud pants. He was walking amongst the masses at some point. Like he was an everyman, as was
Louis Oosthuizen.
Oh, yeah. He was like just right there standing next to me. Like he must have been talking to a friend of his or whatever. He was not even inside the ropes at times.
He seems like a small little guy.
Tiny little guy. So they're all, and I'm watching them warm up, and DeChambeau putting on a show. It's an M80 when he hits the ball in the driving range, so everybody's watching him. And I said to Jimmy, let's walk the first three holes with him, three or four holes. Let's just get
a feel. Because he was off early. He was one of the first off.
He was off early. Nobody's hardly out there. So we're walking with him, watch the first hole. He bombs it 50 yards further than anybody, but he's behind a tree. So he's got to skim it up there. First hole, there were definitely some holes that reminded me of courses that I played in Washington, right, and through the years. And I'm sure that's part of the design of some of them. Number one is totally uphill. It's like an uphill par four, but if you blast it up there, you got a pretty, you know, pretty good look at it. He blasted it behind a tree. So we're watching him, and then we watch him on two. He blasts another one down the fairway. And at this point, I'm feeling my oats a little bit. And I said to Jimmy, I'm going to say something to Bryson. I don't know if it's appropriate. No. Nobody else is.
And does Jimmy know you well enough? Like, I mean, Salk would have been like, do not do that, Brock. You do not do
the night
that.
Before, he got a feel because I was putting on a show Saturday night with some of the other players, making everybody laugh.
Big Hugh getting loose.
Making people laugh, saying funny things like, John Rahm's got a rhino rump, you know? And it's like,
Rahm's rhino rump.
Yes. Yeah, like only I can think of, middle child, left-handed kid. So I'm like, I'm doing it, Jimmy. I'm like, you may want to stand to the right of me here, but I'm just going to start talking to some of these guys. I don't know if it's appropriate or not. Nobody else is really talking to him, really. But I was like, man, B. I called him B.
No, so you
didn't. You called Bryson DeChambeau B?
Yeah, I did. I said, man, B, it is fun to watch you play. And he's like, I appreciate that. Thanks, man. And then just kind of kept walking with them. Is three a par four again? Yeah, three is another long par
three
four.
Three is a par four, yes.
Yep. So we walked one, two, three. Man, the approach. This is a second shot course. That is what I realized. You hear it said. It is. The off the tee, there's, especially for the members, you could see and you hear this said, like, it's not that hard. Because from the front tees, you could play it. It's like Snoqualmie Ridge. But it's that second shot, man. Some of those greens, the two green, oh my gosh. The seventh green, tiny. I mean, tiny. Bubba, we watched Bubba put it to 1 inch, and then it rolled 30 yards down the hill. I'll get to Bubba in a second because he's another one I talked to, as was Webb Simpson.
Webb Simpson. Ooh.
Those are the three that I talked to personally. But B, I felt my oats a little bit. I was like, B, it's fun to watch you play, man. And he kind of looked at me like,
I can't deal with that.
He's like, I appreciate that, man. Thanks. And then, yeah, we got to three, and he was a little baby. So I was kind of actually done talking to him.
Playing the final round of the Masters.
Yeah, well, he had putts at two and three that, you know, could have been birdies, 10 feet, and he just missed it. And he's like kind of starting to baby, and his caddy's like, trust your eyes. 15 years, trust your eyes.
You can hear his caddy's advice.
You hear everything, Kyle. God. You hear everything. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. So that was the first one I talked to. The second was about an hour later. It was Webb Simpson, who supports Compassion International. And I had the president next to me, Jimmy. So what am I going to do? Not say anything to him?
What's up, Dubs?
Yeah, he hits a bomb on eight. Is everybody hit bomb? Eight is a birdie hole, no question. And
that's a way uphill, isn't it? It doesn't look like it.
It is, but it's steep. Yeah, it's a good. And I yelled at him too. But I mean, yelling, we were like probably 10 yards apart. I'm like, hey, Webb, appreciate all you do for Compassion. Thanks, man. Oh, yeah, you got it. Hey, this is Jimmy, the president. Who's Jimmy, right? I felt
who's
like
Jimmy
Grant. Yeah, who's Jimmy?
Who's Jimmy?
I knocked the ball out of his hands and kicked it across the field.
And I'm like, this is Jimmy, the president of Compassion. Oh, that's great. Thanks, man. So both of them didn't poo-poo it at all. Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, they were pretty. They're pretty accommodating.
So, does that bring us to Bubba?
That brings us to Bubba.
Okay,
Bubba also a fan of Compassion, and Bubba wearing Jordan 3 golf shoes. By the way,
yeah,
those are sweet. Of anything I saw, and I bought too much And hopefully when I see you guys, I'll have not given them away to other friends out here. I purposely bought a few things.
Stash something away.
I will stash a few things. If there's anything I could have bought, it'd have been his Jordan 3 golf shoes. They look pretty sweet. And I'm all prepared. Likewise. And our golf guy said, you have to watch Bubba hit a ball.
You got his huge lefty slice.
He moves it more than anybody else. He slices. These other guys fade it and draw it and move it. And Bryson, honestly, it's not human. The sound that it makes in the whistle, it's like a bottle rocket. It is an M80 followed by a bottle rocket. And to watch people jump and flinch and like duck when they know that they're not going to get hit, but they can't help it because it's like Nelson Cruz, like you in the batting cage, Nelson
terrifying.
Cruz.
Terrifying. It's a violent experience.
There's two nets between you, Kyle. Why are you jumping out of the way?
Because a 6'4", 225-pound man is violently swinging a club at a rock-hard ball.
Yes.
Terrifying.
Same thing. DeChambeau makes people just jump out of the way. Bubba, he does. He opens his stance way up. He like jump hits it. It's crazy. I'm all prepared to talk to him a lot. I have met his wife, actually. His wife is my height. His wife is 6'4".
Yeah, she is. Great golfer herself.
Well, before her new knee. She's a basketball player, had to get a new knee, exhausted. I've never seen a woman look more exhausted. She had like her two Rugrats kids.
Hey, all right, okay.
She was done. Right. She was just
That's
spent.
Enough. She looked great.
No, she looked great, but she looked exhausted. I felt for her. Like, this was humanity. This is, my husband's out there. Everybody watches. Like, they all think this, but it's the reality of having kids. And these two kids throwing pine cones at each other, right? Like, just she spent. And, by the way, yes, just got a new knee. So she is exhausted. You could tell. So I didn't bother her too much. I wanted to, but I didn't.
You chose to bother her competing husband instead?
Well,
is that what
the
I'm
one
kind
to wrinkle of. The money to validate this life?
Playing the final round at the Masters?
Kind of. He's out of it. He's not really competing anyway.
Well, he's playing. He made the
cut. Eighth hole, he too. So we walked up and down with Webb and Bryson, these guys, 8, 9, 7. Felt like we were there a lot because we knew we would land on 12, 13, 14 and the rest of the way with the crowd watching everything, right, as a group at the end. So, yeah, so Bubba's there. He's like on 8. And he hits his drive, and he smashes it, and then he whines. Oh, because I think it was either in the bunker or in the pine needles. It was not on the fairway. And he just starts whining to his caddy. 320 into the wind. How'd that happen? And I was like, I can't even talk to him. I want to talk to him, but I'm not even going to talk. I'm not even going to talk to him. It just kind of, and I told Jimmy this beforehand, so he's kind of polarizing. There's some that like him, love him, and certainly there were a lot that were cheering for him, and then he's kind of...
You think Jordan talks down to his caddy, Bubba.
Yes. Oh, boy.
Very guilty.
Couldn't do it. After I heard him whine, Jimmy kind of chuckled a little bit. I'm like, can't do it. So I'm not even going to bother him. Not even going to just give him the Webb Simpson or Bryson B, what's up, B, treatment. Because I was going to say, what's up, Bubba? Yeah, what's up, Bubba? Man, it's so fun to watch you play. I was going to be affirming in all of my praise, but I couldn't do it for him. Oh, I talked to Jordan, too. I should mention that.
Wait, you talked to Jordan Spieth? Yeah.
Bearing the lead.
Sorry.
Jordan Spieth?
Yes,
or like you 10. Met a guy named Jordan there.
On number 10, birdie 9, feeling good. You walk from, and that's the other beauty of this place. And I know, gosh, I'm running out of time. I got to get going here in 10 minutes. So we can do this on the next week's podcast with Salk, too. So the other beauty is there's a bunch of holes where you can see three things at once.
Mm-hmm.
So you like 9, 10 green, you could see 8. Like that's the cool.
I mean,
part
from like 12 tee, you can what see 11 green, 12
yes.
and
so,
13 tee.
Yes. So we put our chairs down early at 12, right behind Patrick Mahomes' chair, by the way, as it turns out.
Big news for Titus.
Yep. Titus asked lots of questions. So we put our chair, second row, on Amen Corner, right by the tee block. Not behind it. The camera view is a little more behind it. We were to the right of it. But, yes, you watch the ball come into 11. You watch 12. And then, you know, this is what you don't see on TV. After 12, they go up and hit on the 13th tee, and they walk back down another bridge that is to the right of the 12th green. So you see people walking up and down that cart path for them. That's all blocked off to spectators. But I never saw that before on television. They cut that. So you don't ever see people to the right of that green. But players – and then there's some that when they tee off, you got to kind of wait. Like 15 and 16, the golfers are on the tee looking back. There's another hole. gosh, I don't know which other one it was, but there's a couple tee blocks to green that you see the pros. So Justin Thomas was looking down, waiting for guys to finish on the green before he hits, and vice versa for a roar. So that actually would be 10. So the 10 green looks up, I think it may be, I don't know, 15 or 16. So yeah, there's a bunch of activity all around. So yeah, on the 10th after Jordan birdie 9, again, nobody around. I'm just like, man, it's fun to watch you play, Jordan. Thanks, man. Waved. Just got a little wave. Whoa. Got a little wave. So, so Kyle, you would have been, I will be for the rest of my life. These things just embedded in my mind. You would have just,
I mean,
I don't know what you would have done.
So now that you've seen it,
yeah,
you walked it. Yeah. From the tips, what do you shoot? Now, for compare, Brock, I mean, you're an 80s golfer.
High 80s, low 90s when I play. I'd prep a bunch. So it was 10. It was 11. It was 11. Where the members play on 11, Kyle, is, I'm not kidding you, it's like when you go to Chambers, when we went to Chambers, right? And you play there where you play, and then you look at where they had it set up.
Yeah. And there's like, the black tees. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah, that's another 100 yards. Like 11 for the normal crowd, you could play decently. You
That's
add
how
another,
Jim Moore went out there years ago and shot an 82, I believe.
Where, at the Masters?
From like the whites, yes.
He played the Masters?
He covered the Masters, won the media lottery, and got to play Augusta like the following Monday.
Wow. Wow.
But yes. not from the tips.
From the tips, you're not breaking 100, not even close. I don't know if you break 115 from the tips. You're talking 240-yard par threes, number 11, you know, you got to hit through. From where they played, no chance. The next tees up where the members play, you could see that this would be a fun course because it's a little more forgiving off the tee, but there's no way. Every green's three-tiered. The speed of those putts, Kyle, watching them tap a putt, anytime they were above the hole, you're like, you just got no chance. 16. Like where Hideki left it, you know, we're right there. So let me just lastly finish with this. And we didn't get to the rest of the potpourri. I apologize. We will next week with the Huskies. Hamir Wright's comments aren't going anywhere. I can give you some updates on Husky football from inside the ropes. We'll do all of that next week.
But let's get to what happened on the 15th green and the 16th tee on Sunday.
Yes. So I'm sitting there at the end. So we're there. As I said, we hunker down at 12. We watch the last Zalatoris, all 140 pounds of them. You know, we watch all these guys play, and then Leishman and that crew and Justin Rose. So we're at 12, and then we just kind of follow. And then we scurry. We're like, okay, we'll watch Hideki on 12. They all hit it between the bunkers, as Tiger says to do, right? And then we'll scurry over, and Jordy Nelson, who I was with, found a great spot. Well, underneath,
that came out of nowhere late in the conversation, but go on.
Great guy. And underneath a leaderboard where you could see back to 15th green, and you're right in between 15 and 16, right where Hideki went in the water.
Yep.
There's a bunch of trees and grass in between, and there's a leaderboard, and you could sit and watch. And then actually I snuck over and got as close to the 16th green as I could and put my chair there. Great spot. So I'm watching the 16th green. Leishman nearly
holds it.
That's
the par 3 over water where Shoffley got in trouble.
Yes, yes. Leishman nearly holes it, and I look back, and the crowd is freaking out because Shoffley almost eagles, right? Chips it to, so the crowd is going nuts. And
we got a tournament on our hands.
Yes, and when Hideki went into the water, people were like, So I ran up to leaderboard, looked at it, ran back to my seat, watched all of it, watched 16. I couldn't see the flight of the ball, shocker.
Because you don't have a phone. You have to go to the leaderboard to know, wow, that's a different dynamic.
Oh, it is. You're running back and forth and back and forth. And yeah, so I'm right there when his ball, boom, hits and trickles into the pond, tournament over. And then we scurried to 18 right by the green to watch all of that, to watch it unfold, the cheers. He's in the bunker. I said to Jordy, what do you think his heart rate is? He's like, oh, he's fine. This is his tournament now.
Is he?
Yep.
Ooh,
yeah.
He won it by a stroke. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, the bunker shot, he was fine. And then he obviously missed the par putt. So had Xander been able to press him at all, oh my gosh, could have been absolutely epic. So there's a half hour on the Masters, and I got more.
I got more.
So unbelievable time. We will talk about it next week. We'll finish, Kyle, whatever questions we didn't get to. I mentioned the food earlier. I'm going to tell you right now, they did have a barbecue chicken sandwich that was okay. The other sandwiches I told you earlier, not good, not even close. So maybe if the Masters wants to upgrade in one little way, maybe they can reach out to Famous Dave's. Okay, because if you have to reschedule a wedding, you know, which a lot of people have. If you got an outdoor work happy hour that maybe you're trying to figure out here, maybe you got a belated birthday party, maybe you got a graduation party.
Coming up.
I've got for my Haley coming up here in about a month. Famous Dave's is the way to go. And 100 times, I'd say 100 times better than a couple of the sandwiches that I had at the Masters. I don't think that's an exaggeration. And their catering is ideal for any of those situations. Check out Famous Dave's Catering. You pick the date and Famous Dave's handles all the rest. You can customize your delivery, pick up, full service. They got their famous queue designed to allow you to kick back, relax, and crush some classic barbecue. From our smoking starters and the fresh salads to barbecue bundles and feasts, the slow-cooked goodness is ready to party when you are. Leave the catering, leave the barbecuing to the very best. Check out more at famousdaves.com. So all of that is waiting for you. I can't wait. It was fun to share all of that with you guys. I don't know if Salk's going to listen to this podcast or not. I know, Kyle, I didn't get to a handful of your questions, so we will unpack that next week. Howdy, thank you for your brilliance. Kyle, thank you for, I can feel it. I can feel your curiosity. I can feel it on the Masters. So thank you for that as well. Thank you to Famous Dave. Thank you for listening. And let's say some prayers and some good thoughts for our boy, Mike Salk, and make sure he's back next week on the Brock and Salk podcast.
Get to the chopper!